On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Sundance Film Festival wraps up this week in Park City, Utah. Ski country, indie film country. Big Sundance themes: economic hard times, complicated relationships, strong leading women. We'll talk with two keen Sundance watchers who have been in the thick of the festival this week, and with writer, actor, director Mark Duplass, who's become a Sundance regular and has three films at the festival this year. This hour on Point, the view from indie film land and this year's Sundance Film Festival. You can join the conversation. What do you need from indie filmmakers now? What do you need them to do, see, put on screen that big studios don't or won't? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, and you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Big indie film country at Sundance. Lots of films: Sex Lies, Videotape, Reservoir Dogs, Man on Wire, The Usual Suspects, Clerks. Over the years, those and many more have come out of Sundance. Indie film, rugged, low-cost often. Of course, there's also a lot of swag, and there can be plenty of pretension. Things people say, videos, or funny, fast-paced compilations of people spouting cliches about, well, anything. Here's one from this year's Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. Things people say.
Enjoy this moment.
You have to enjoy this moment.
I went a little too hard last night.
I love Starship Troopers.
Oh my God, there's Taylor Swift.
My lips are so chapped.
What film are you here with? Oh, I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Oh my God, I love those boots. Who wears freaking heels in the snow?
Can you say, you know, kill them all?
I'm having a great time.
Andy McDowell was standing in front of us.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing yours, man.
We're looking for a comeback.
It's a real honor just to be here.
Okay, you can send up anything, and some of the news reporting sounds like sending up. Here's Access Hollywood correspondent Tim Vincent describing the scene at Sundance.
I'm outside the Egyptian on Main Street. I have my pass for all the parties and the films. The only thing that hasn't turned up is the snow, but I can guarantee plenty of stars.
All the parties and the films. We're going to focus on the films today. Joining us now from Park City, Utah, in the Sundance Film Festival is Krista Smith, West Coast editor for Vanity Fair. Krista, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And with us from Los Angeles, just out of Sundance, is Steve Zajcik, arts and entertainment writer at the Los Angeles Times. His blog for the LA Times website is 24 Frames. He's just back from Park City and Sundance Country last night. Steve, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
It's great to have you both with us. Krista, dive straight in with us. First, the themes. What do you see this year?
Well, the snow definitely did come.
Good. Okay. So
that,
it looks like it's supposed to look.
It looks like it's supposed
Everybody
to look.
Everybody can wear their cool boots.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this year I had a lot of fun with it because, as you said earlier, there were a lot of strong female performances, and it's kind of raunchy female roles, I think, because of Bridesmaids or whatever's in the air. Mm-hmm. It certainly crossed over into independent into the festival this year with the Bachelorette, these girls doing these things that you wouldn't anticipate that they'd be doing. Save the Date, this girl, young actress Lizzie Kaplan's in two movies. And also, like you said, the strong female performances. Mm-hmm. Aubrey Plaza, who's on a show here called Parks and Recs, and she actually had her first lead in a movie and did really, really well. It was a great film called Safety Not Yet Guaranteed. Rashida Jones, who's also on that show, wrote and produced her own movie called Celeste and Jesse Forever. And even the young actress that was in Beasts of the Southern Wild, which is a film everyone's kind of comparing to visually like the next Terrence Malick. Mm-hmm. It was starred a six-year-old girl in it. So you're right to say there are a lot of female performances across the board, and really some engaging comedies, some tough relationships, but at the same time, a lot of humor.
I want to dig into some of those. We've got a little bit here of Octavia Spencer, a female who's been right mm-hmm. up front, won a Golden Globe and an Oscar nominee for her role in The Help. And here she was talking with the David Carger Entertainment Weekly about what it meant for her to be at Sundance in the new film Smashed.
Doing The Help really has afforded me the opportunity to get to do these small, really wonderful indie scripts.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been able actually to do those either, so I'm thrilled.
And in Smashed, you play an AA counselor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm sober from alcohol. Not sober from snack foods, obviously. and I am Mary Elizabeth Winstead's sponsor.
Got it.
There with Octavia Spencer and mm-hmm. Smashed. Steve Zajcik in L.A., what can you tell us about Smashed and Octavia's role there?
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting role. I mean, it's a supporting one, but Smashed is, you know, again, as Krista was saying, it's another film where there's kind of a strong female lead, as you heard Octavia say, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who plays this kind of young woman who's, you know, reasonably sort of leads a reasonably stable life. She's a woman who, you know, is a teacher and seems happily married, but she has a bit of a drinking problem, and she decides kind of early in the film to do something about it and get sober, and she goes to an AA meeting at which Octavia is also, you know, kind of also attends and, mm-hmm. and becomes her sponsor. And I think this sort of general vibe was kind of very much, again, what Krista was saying, there were some kind of strong dramatic female parts, but I think a lot of them really did come kind of what we call the indie bridesmaids trend. A lot of the movies were made before, or at least developed before Bridesmaids came out, but they certainly got a bit of a jump start and attracted attention because of that film. Another movie I would add in that vein is called For a Good Time Call, and this is two women who basically decide, because they're struggling economically, so there's a little bit of that trend in there too, but they decide to start a phone sex line out of their apartment, kind of very raunchy. A lot of these films are really trying to kind of almost one-up each other or one-up Judd Apatow on the sort of...
The heavy breathing front.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so there's a little bit of that. And you know, and it's kind of ultimately a sweet movie about female friendship. I think the kind of interesting trend or sort of inference to make there is that, you know, where a lot of these movies, even that had strong female characters, these kind of broader commercial movies, tended to put the romance first. They tend to be more romantic comedies. These movies, like Bridesmaids, are a lot more about female friendship. And I think that, you know, again, these movies had a Sundance twist. They were certainly indie films. They were not, you know, big-budget studio comedies, but they definitely focused both on the kind of R-rated sort of hijinks as well as on the female friendships.
We're live on the Sundance Film Festival this year. And listeners, you can join us. What do you need from indie filmmakers these days? We're at 800-423-8255. Krista Smith of Vanity Fair is with us and Steve Zajcik of the Los Angeles Times. Let's take a call from Nashville, Tennessee. Meredith's calling. Hi, Meredith. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say I think it would be great for indie filmmakers. I work at a nonprofit in Nashville that works with the homeless, and there are so many both tragic and beautiful stories that these people have that I think it would be great to share those stories and kind of build some relationships and build some gaps in our communities if people just knew the stories that would cause people to either be on the streets or go through addictions and just see the depth of these people that they drive by every day and even ignore at times. So I think that would be something that hasn't been tapped into yet, and I would love to see that happen.
Meredith, I really appreciate your call from Nashville. Krista Smith, Hard Times is another of the themes that comes up out of this year's festival. Meredith says, turn those cameras on the homeless and tell the stories behind the stereotype. What about the Hard Times vein this year?
Well, I think that it was filtered throughout a lot of films in here. Spike Lee had a movie that takes place in the Red Hook Projects about you saw from that angle, but there was also a lot of comedy in that as well. But I think the one that kind of encapsulates it perfectly was this documentary that premiered opening night here called Queen of Versailles. And that was it took a couple who were building the largest house in North America at 90,000 square feet, and they fell on hard times. So in the beginning, you see
quote-unquote hard times. They're not exactly
homeless in
Nashville.
Yeah, quote-unquote hard times, right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But it was a very interesting to watch, people responded very positively to it because you saw, as you would say, the top 1%, exact opposite of the homeless people, and how kind of out of touch. It was like watching a reality show when they can no longer afford the servants. And I was amazed at how they let her keep filming, and they took mm-hmm. them through a period of years, and you saw when they had absolute all the money until when they were losing the house and the dogs were running all over the place, peeing and pooping everywhere, mm-hmm. and they had no idea on how to actually live without throngs of servants doing every kind of function for them.
We'll look at Queen of Versailles, but on the harder times front, there's another one this year, Detroitpia, directed by Heidi Ewig and Rachel Grady, a film about the struggles of Detroit, and a kind of warning in this film to the rest of the country of what could lie ahead. Here's a little bit from Detroitpia, where workers discuss a hard-to-swallow new union contract.
For factory support, which is the guys that are making $14.35, their new proposal is $11 an hour, which means they will lose $3.35 an hour on their wage.
Tell them we refuse to vote on this. This is hogwash.
I'm willing to take it to the hilt. Take it all the way out. If we got to stand out there come February, I'm willing to stand out there. I'm willing to take it all the way. Because I ain't got, I ain't got nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose in the Sundance documentary film, Detroitpia. I mean, talk about making it real, Steve. You hear it right there. You're at $14 an hour. You're taking it down to 11. These people have families. They have lives. It's hard to make it work on that. And they're saying, watch out, America, with this film.
Yeah, exactly. And Detroitpia, I think, was a film that really captured that, even though it is focused, as you say, on a very specific geographic area. There is a kind of cautionary tale slash sort of, you know, kind of warning sign aspect to it where you kind of wonder where this could go. I mean, the documentaries, the thing that was sort of noticeable to me was how many of these documentaries dealt with a kind of American malaise. I mean, certainly there are the economic themes that we've been talking about, but there's just kind of other issues. There's a movie called Finding North, which is about hunger and kind of how much more pervasive it is sort of as an issue that then we realized. There's Kirby Dick, who's a very well-known documentarian, had a film called The Invisible War, which is about this sort of epidemic, as he very kind of powerfully demonstrates, of rape in the military. And so, you know, Eugene Jarecki, another great director, kind of Oscar acclaimed, had a movie about the war on drugs called The House I Live In. So it's really interesting, even as sort of some of these comedies we've been focusing on have been a little bit breezier, the documentaries seem to be harder hitting than ever. And, you know, Sundance obviously does not shy away from that. You look at movies like An Inconvenient Truth. Certainly they deal with social issues.
Steve, hold the thought right there if you'd be good enough. We've got a break right in front of us. We're talking about the Sundance Film Festival. Listeners, what do you want from our indie films now? 800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about this year's crop of indie films at the Sundance Film Festival. Stories of complicated relationships, stories of hard times. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you want from our indie films that you're not getting from the big studios these days? Where do you need those indie cameras, young filmmakers looking now? And what does the Sundance label mean to you? Does it mean an independent eye, a breakout sensibility? Does it mean swag and pampered kids in the mountains? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Krista Smith joins us from Park City, Utah, Sundance Territory. She's West Coast editor for Vanity Fair, has spent the last week at the Sundance Film Festival, has been there, 15, 20 times now. Steve Zaitchik is with us, arts and entertainment writer at the Los Angeles Times, just back to L.A. last night from Sundance. You can join us, 800-423-8255. A couple of films we've already mentioned here. I've got clips from Queen of Versailles. This is director Lauren Greenfield spending about 3 years filming the Siegel family for her documentary. They set out to build the largest house in America, 90,000 plus square feet, hundreds of staff here. Billionaire David Siegel, before he lost it all, and his wife Jackie explain how their grand idea got started.
We went to France and we saw Versailles, and we were inspired by the French architecture.
I drew it on the back of an envelope on my way to Las Vegas. We kind of copied the top three floors of the Paris Hotel. Probably should have used smaller envelopes because it turned out to be the largest home in America.
I said, well, I'd like to have a bowling alley. And then he says, I want a health spa. And then I said, we need maids' quarters.
Gross. It's huge. 90,000 plus square feet. Talk about the 1% or the 0.0001% while it lasted. Up against that, the very real reality for too many people, Laurie Silverbush and Christy Jacobson directed Finding North. It's a moving documentary, illuminates the problem of searing food insecurity in the United States and the people trying to work on it, solve it. Here from Finding North.
We're living now in a time where we can really make a difference.
We need to get better nutritious foods in school.
I was one of those kids that was hungry. It was difficult because I could see how difficult it was for my mother when she would return from the food bank. I deliver food bags every week.
She kind of saves me from getting hungry.
Saves me from getting hungry, celebrating there the effort of people to feed hungry people in these times. Krista Smith, what about the comb that Sundance takes through all the applicants? I mean, I'm reading here more than 4,000 films submitted, only 111 actually get shown in terms of what they're looking for, documentary versus fiction and, you know, tough stuff versus, I don't know, inspiring stuff. How do they decide what's going to make it? Is it on quality alone? Is there a certain balance of documentary versus, fiction narrative?
Well, there's a variety of sections that they have. There's the stuff that's in competition, then they have the world cinema, documentary and films, and they have various premieres. But I think that the competition, every year it gets more and more and more and more. And I've been here, I think, as you were saying, at least 15 years. Mm-hmm. And the documentaries to me are always the most interesting because it's curated as such where you do have something like The Queen of Versailles, which is something where you're taking on this insane, like you said, 0%, and then you're taking on Detroit or Hunger in America or Rape in the Military. Mm-hmm. It casts a wide cloth of a variety of stuff. And I think that more and more they're known for really picking the best of documentary films. So if you were just to see documentaries here, you'd have a great festival.
I've got a little tape here of Robert Redford, of course, the founder of an interview on the Sundance Channel, talking about the evolving importance of the festival and those documentaries, the role they play in sort of helping us understand ourselves.
I think filmmakers can tell stories about the American country we're living in that sometimes are more realistic and more truthful than what we get coming out of the Beltway. Documentaries have increased in their importance and their skill to the point where they're almost becoming the equivalent of investigative journalists. I think that has value, and that's what Sundance was meant to be, an alternative to some of the choices that are out there that are more mainstream.
Steve, what about that claim that we've got here, a kind of a, alternative eye on the news here, investigative reporting, digging in where the mainstream sometimes media does not?
Well, it's really an interesting point and kind of dovetails with what we've been seeing on the sort of print side of and broadcast side of journalism for a while now, which is, I don't think it's a secret to anyone, that there have been a lot of cutbacks, and documentarians have sort of the luxury of being able to really spend a lot of time with the story and dive pretty deep. I wouldn't say that it's, completely kind of taken over the role that kind of traditional media has had, but certainly when you look at the films this year, they kind of get very deep into problems that we kind of maybe cover a little bit more superficially, and maybe more to the point, they also offer, as a lot of these films do, if you just played that clip of Finding North, they offer some solutions. And I think that, again, kind of in these times when people maybe do or don't want to see these very difficult stories, they certainly do want to hear about kind of things we can do about them. So I think they kind of play both roles, both the investigative and the prescriptive.
You look back at Super Size Me 2004, that pointed up a big issue with how we eat and its implications for our health in this country. Listeners, what do you want from indie filmmakers these days? Ed in Renz, Georgia is calling. Hi, Ed. Thanks. You're on the air.
Hey, yes. On the Sundance program, how about if somebody would actually look at the trucking industry? I mean, the cost of everything is going up in the stores. More regulations are being put on the trucks, yet the average truck driver is making less than what he actually made 20 years ago. And it's only predicted to get worse. But they're always trying to blame the trucks for every single thing that goes wrong on the road when it's not actually the truck's fault.
Are you a big rig driver yourself, Ed? Do you feel things toughening up?
Excuse me?
Are you a big rig driver yourself?
Yes, sir. I've been driving since the end of 1999.
And the wages don't get better, and the requirements get stiffer. I appreciate your call, Ed. I mean, Krista, there, talk about a working man. He wants to see that kind of thing reflected here. Does Detroitpia get to that? It sounded like it from the clip we heard about wages.
Yeah, a bit. I mean, I think that the trucking industry, he has a very good point. I think it's an unexplored environment that I would actually love to see a documentary on, just for all the points that he was saying, and also just the lifestyle of a long-distance trucker. But I do think that the documentaries, like in Detroit, I mean, that was a microcosm of 10 years ago, basically foreshadowing of what's happening in America now. And the kind of tagline is like they got the memo a long time ago, and look out because it's coming to your city and your state as well. And I think we're living in that environment right now is kind of proof to it.
This festival is interesting this year in the way it looks at it from both angles, the 1%, the 99, or the bottom. Mm-hmm. This is another one from the top, not Queen of Versailles, but Nicholas Jarecki making his directorial debut with Arbitrage. And this follows Robert Miller, a fraudulent investment manager played by Richard Gere. And here Miller, Gere, argues with his daughter, who serves as his chief investment officer. Things are falling apart.
There's something I want to tell you. Whatever you decide, I won't blame you. I'm on my own path. It's up to you to move with it or against it. But I'm the patriarch. That's my role. And I have to play it.
For a moment there, I thought you were going to say you were sorry.
Yeah, but she's wrong. It's not going to be family over finance there. It's going to be finance first. What about big stars who show up in these films, Steve? What brings Richard Gere into a Sundance film? Or Robert De Niro? He's out there this year and more.
Yeah, it's certainly we've seen a lot more stars in recent years do these kinds of films, and I think part of it is that, you know, the Hollywood studio system is not making these kind of more serious dramatic pictures. And so, you know, in the case of Gere, I know Jarecki kind of went to him and said, you know, you want to make a film that kind of taps into what America is going through right now, and you go to the studios and you're basically going to get action vehicles, and I'm not sure he's even getting those roles. So, you know, this is a good opportunity for you. And so he took it. You know, and I think that we're seeing more of that. I mean, there are a couple of people who can get films made within the system that are more serious. I mean, you look at George Clooney, who did that with The Ides of March this year, a film he directed. Mm-hmm. Brad Pitt made Moneyball, which is a more serious movie. But for the most part, most big names, if they want to do more serious work, have to go the indie route, and that's how we see their films at Sundance.
Let's talk with somebody who's right in the middle of all this, acting, writing, producing, directing. Mark Duplass joins us right now from Park City, Utah, on Sundance. He has three films this year at Sundance. He's executive producer of Your Sister's Sister, where he plays Jack, who's coping with the death of his brother. He's executive producer of Safety Not Guaranteed. He plays Kenneth, plays a classified ad seeking a time travel partner. Yes, time travel. And with his wife, Kate Eselton, directed the new thriller Black Rock, which he wrote and produced. The film stars Kate Bosworth. You may remember Cyrus. He produced, wrote, directed to 2010, just last year. He's a star of the FX comedy The League, a sitcom about a fantasy football league. Mark Duplass, you're a very busy guy. Thanks for joining us today from Sundance.
Thanks for having me, guys. How's it going?
It's pretty well. What do you make of the mood there this year? Ticket sales have been down all over the country for movies. Is that a worry for Sundance producers, directors, yourself?
I don't think so, you know, and I try not to concern myself with those bigger items as much. You know, I may be an optimist, but I truly believe that if you're making a film that has an interesting point of view, and if you're making a film that can come to Sundance and show something unique and interesting to an audience member, okay, maybe the box office is down 2%, but let's take the 30,000 feet view here for a second. You know, we're in a place in time in independent film where the cameras are cheap, where I can go out with my wife and make a movie for under $100,000 and bring it to Sundance and sell it well and get it seen and make a piece of art. So I kind of take the approach of there's a little bit to complain about, but we have more power in our hands than we've ever had. So I encourage people to just pipe down a little bit and go make your movie.
Mark, when you come to Sundance and with three films, that's a real basket full. What are you looking for exactly? Are you looking to share with your colleagues? Are you looking to get this out to, I don't know, how all the avenues for getting out these days? Are you looking for a deal? I mean, deals famously get made there. Lionsgate and Roadside Attractions and Sony all buying and others this year. What are you looking for?
You know, every movie is different and has a different agenda. You know, I first came to Sundance in 2003 with a short film that cost us $3 to make, you know.
That's small money.
Yeah, and at that stage in my career, you know, my brother and I were looking to find producers to work with and to take meetings. And now that we're a little more downstream, a film like Black Rock that my wife directed it's a really solid commercial movie in a lot of ways. It's I guess we'd call it like an elevated thriller. It's it's sort of a deliverance for girls with good performances. So the goal on that movie was really, you know, we want to get that out to a wider audience, and we were able to do that. On a movie like Safety Not Guaranteed, which is it's an odd DNA of a movie. It's sort of a sensitive time travel relationship movie. So that was more of like, you know what? Sundance is really the only place that will accept sort of an odd hybrid movie like this. And the goal with that was to get it out and share with audiences and have that, you know, that wonderful independent film conversation that you have with coffee after the movie.
Black Rock, Safety Not Guaranteed, Your Sister's Sister, Deliverance for Girls, Mark Duplass says in Black Rock. Krista, what are the stakes for a filmmaker, an actor, a producer like Mark Duplass at Sundance? I mean, he's been there a lot. He's an incredibly productive guy, 3 in 1 year. Is it about reputation? Is it about making a living? Is it about keeping up with the front edge of the wave?
I think it's all of it. I mean, Mark and his brother Jay Duplass are kind of known for their for Sundance. I mean, they came here, like you said, many years ago, and it's like if you have a great idea and you want to get into Sundance, go talk to Mark and Jay. But in terms of their films this year, I think, which is so interesting, and he kind of touched on it, is how he and how he's evolved over the course of the past like 8 years, coming with a tiny short film, coming each year with more and more, and also as he himself as an actor. And I see something like The Black Rock, and that goes back to earlier what we were saying in the beginning of the hour about suddenly we have these three girls and Katie, his wife, directed it but also stars in it, and you think they're going to have this great kind of girl bonding trip on this, you know, island childhood you know, experience like they used to have when they were young. And it turns into a heart palpitating thriller, and it premiered at the Midnight Section and it sold immediately. And I think those kinds of things, that was very exciting, I think, on every level. One, a midnight screening selling quickly. Two, females action movie, you know, a Deliverance meets Rambo, a kind of, you know, unexpected experience in the theater. So for the Duplasses, I mean, the world's their oyster at this point, I think. they just keep doing more and more and expanding, and their kind of blueprint, like he says, is very inspiring. And anybody can pick up a camera and make a film, and it doesn't have to be about the equipment or the special effects, or if you have a story to tell and you have a point of view, it's getting easier and cheaper to make.
Mark, you know, you've climbed up here with really interesting work over the years, but is Sundance important to you as a market for selling this? I mean, couldn't you go sort of, I don't know, take 5 meetings in Hollywood and do the same thing? What's the difference?
Yeah, there's definitely the option of, say, taking a movie like Black Rock or Your Sister's Sister, which, you know, it's me and Emily Blunt and Rosemary DeWitt. It's a very marketable romantic comedy in a lot of ways. We can take those movies to market. We can call all the distributors because we know them now and say, hey, come on out and check out this movie. But for whatever reason, I got my career start at Sundance. They dug my little ugly-looking short film out of a pile, and they took a chance on me. And this has become, in my opinion, the greatest place to truly be a barometer for how your film plays in an audience, what you can expect for it to do in the world. And, you know, I've just had this just luck, really, that they have embraced us, and I embrace Sundance back. I've premiered pretty much all of my films here, and I truly believe that this is the best place to sell a film because, to be honest with you, I'm not always looking for the biggest number on the sale. I'm looking for the company who's the right fit, and honestly, if the movie doesn't play well, then maybe they shouldn't buy it for $1 million.
Mark,
you have to consider the whole environment.
Mark, you've got a great sense of the pulse of this thing. Over the years, you've been coming. It's a sort of a decade roughly now. Do you see American indie filmmakers becoming more or less brave, doing more or less important work? However you want to define that.
here's what I'm seeing. With the growth of technology, what it means is more and more independent films are being made. In the 90s, you had to shoot your movies on film, which meant it was a smaller group of people who had the money to make independent film.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can make a movie on your iPhone that will look good. This means we're seeing thousands more submissions, and this means we're seeing tons and tons of more bad movies being made. Every programmer will tell you that. But what it does do is it emboldens the chance that strange 19-year-old kid who's living in Columbus, Ohio, who has this strange idea while living in his mom's basement, can just break out without any training and without any money. And that, to me, is the most exciting element of what technology has brought us. And we're seeing more of that. And also, something that's happening is, you know, you mentioned Richard Gere did Arbitrage for a lower budget so that he could you know, honestly get his creative rocks off. And we're now in a really wonderful time where I'm sorry that it's frustrating that adult films are not being made in the bigger budget sphere. But again, I have a little bit of a low tolerance for complaints. That to me means we can go approach them and say, hey, let's go run and gun and make this thing our way with no studio at all. In a lot of ways, it's like the early 70s.
Again. Right.
We're coming out of that you know, Roger Corman school of filmmaking and the power.
There's opportunity right there. Mark Duplass, we're up against the break. Mark Duplass of The League, Safety Not Guaranteed, Your Sister, Sister, Black Rock, Thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about this year's crop of indie films at the Sundance Film Festival. Stories of complicated relationships, hard times, strong female leads. Krista Smith of Vanity Fair is with us from Park City, Utah, and the Sundance Festival. Steve Zaitchik is with us from the Los Angeles Times. Spent the week at Sundance as well. They've been looking inside and out at what is on the screens there. You can join us. What do you want from our indie films that you're not getting elsewhere these days? What does the Sundance label mean to you? Have you been? How was it? What did you see there? Have you taken a film to Sundance? How did it go? And what do you hear in this year's films, this year's themes? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. One new film, Robot and Frank, I've seen a little bit of and really enjoyed. This is from director Jake Schreier. It's got an elderly father played by Frank Langella. He gets annoyed when a caretaker robot that his son has employed gives him grapefruit for breakfast.
Just bring me some cereal.
That cereal is full of unhealthy ingredients. I threw it away.
Don't throw away my stuff.
Frank, that cereal is for children. Enjoy this grapefruit.
You're for children, stupid.
Today we're going to start a garden.
Oh, this.
Frank, you need a project. Mental stimulation plus a regimented schedule will vastly improve your cognitive functioning. Besides, it's good exercise. Frank, we're going to have to work together.
You are a robot butler.
I'm not a butler, Frank. I'm a healthcare aide, programmed to monitor and improve your physical and mental health.
Yeah, get out of my house.
I gotta say, I just love the little bit I saw this. It looks like kind of a friendly mini Star Wars warrior robot there, white and black, and standing around the breakfast table there with Frank Langella. Steve, this is quite charming, and maybe a little glimpse of the future for all we know.
Well, it really was one of the breakouts of the festival, and kind of it goes right to Mark's point of, you know, these kind of small, quirky films that, you know, no one would really know, even on the page, when you read the script, what this film is going to be. And then, you know, thanks to a great performance by Frank and thanks to Jake's direction, becomes something really interesting. And, you know, the other thing that speaks to, I know Mark is in and really shines in a movie called Safety Not Guaranteed, which also it deals with a little bit of time travel, as you said, and kind of has this almost sort of off-kilter feel. It takes place in our world, but maybe kind of either a little bit in the future or a little bit outside of our world as well. And I think that's really what Sundance can do so well. It can take these kind of premises that are maybe a little bit more offbeat, a little quirkier, you know, still kind of tell a fairly sort of straightforward story, but do it in a way or set it in a world where things are just a little bit off. And I think that Robot and Frank is kind of Sundance at its best.
I loved it. Robot and Frank. Here's just a little more where here's Frank Langella and the robot's threatening to call his son, who's got a robot taking care of the aging father. The robot says, I'm gonna call your son to get you in line.
You're calling him? Look, you heard what he said. He was trying to put me into a nut house.
I don't recall Hunter saying that.
There's nothing wrong with my memory. I'm fine, I'm telling you. I'm fine. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. My memory is fine. What am I doing? I'm talking to an appliance.
Krista, you've got to love when a great actor like Frank Langella comes out and does it in such a funny little kind of setup. But wow, he makes the most of it.
Well, it is. It's perfect. It's exactly what Steve said. It's a perfect Sundance hybrid. You have a big name star like Frank Langella in this little quirky movie that's so effective. And it is just set right outside the future, about 10 years from now. And we can all see that where, you know, and it's also touches a social issue, too, where people are taking care of their parents, and it's becoming a strain actually on community and families. What are we going to do with we're all living so much longer, and our economic resources kind of solves a little bit of that problem. What if there was a robot that could fill that slot. So it's very engaging and amusing, and also with a big star in it, and it's very, very funny, and it kind of re-galvanizes the character of Frank, and I think it was a Sundance gem.
800-423-8255. Response online here. Liliana says, I'd like to see Indies explore a contemporary socioeconomic political dilemma with intelligent dialogue and visionary analysis for the future. There's a real hunger for that in this country right now. Caroline says, you know, been out, and with regard, without snarkiness here, she loved the discussion panels on the social issues addressed by the film. She said, 2 years ago, I took my teenage son to an excellent panel featuring the founders of the Harlem Children's Zone, the Grameen Bank, among others. Wonderful experience. He still talks about it. Another listener writes, more documentaries, please, and I'd like to see a film on the black market in human organ trafficking. I've seen that getting some attention in thrillers lately. I guess nothing really off limits here. Let's go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Tom. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I believe I got an excellent, long overdue worthy topic for a documentary on the Economic Times, and I personally had, I'm still going through it. I believe how Economic Times affect the child support and arrears, and I would like to see something on that where, you know, it's all one-sided.
You're talking about, I'm guessing, what, Tom, a father, maybe yourself, up against it, providing that child support when you come on hard times, but yet there's the child, too?
Yes, correct. I'm not going to get into the whole story, but, you know, unfortunately went through a nasty divorce, ran off the divorce attorney. That's a whole another subject. But, the domestic relations department, I had my own business for 15 years. When the economy took a crash, my business took a crash. And, you know, consequently, my income went down drastically. And, you know, I cried for help, went to the courts with my tax,
yep.
Everything. They just did not care. They gave me 1 hour to come up with $5,000 arrears, which I didn't have. And, you know, I had to beg, borrow, and steal to get it. But I know lots of guys that are in the same boat. They put them in jail. They just throw them in jail. They don't want to hear their sob story.
Yeah, Tom, we feel it. There's the pain there. We all know also the pain on the other side when that child support doesn't come in. Clearly room for some drama there. I mean, you've got not exactly the same, but a little lick, maybe similar here. There's a movie, Philly Brown, at Sundance this year. Let me offer you, Tom. This is directed by Yusuf Dallara and Michael Olmos. Gina Rodriguez plays, this is a young Latina rapper, Philly Brown, struggling to keep her family together while pursuing a music career. Here's a little bit where she appeals to her father to help out a family friend.
She needs our help, Dad. Why is it so hard for you?
Because I don't have it.
Well, come on. We can, you know, maybe you can get an advance from that job you keep talking about.
I can't.
She needs help, and the dad says he can't because he doesn't have it. He doesn't have the scratch to hand over. Stephen, there's that kind of hard times theme again. I just don't have it. I can't do it for you.
No, it's absolutely right. And there's Philly Brown is it's a nice little movie with this up and coming star named Gina Rodriguez, who I think was working as a waitress until about 3 minutes ago. So it's sort of a feel good story there. And you know, that's where on the drama side, I think some of these movies, as much as they deal with difficult times, there is a little bit of uplift as people break through. Another movie we haven't talked about that certainly fits a lot of these trends is called The Surrogate. And this is a film. It was bought for a fair bit of money. It's going to be released quite broadly within the next year. It stars it's about a middle-aged man who is disabled and has never had sex, and he'd like to lose his virginity, and he hires a sex surrogate. And sorry, the story sounds very kind of, when you first hear it, it sounds a little bit kind of sort of weird and kind of unconventional, but it's a very uplifting story.
This is John Hawks and Helen Hunt, I think.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Really big stars in it, and John Hawks, of course, who was in Winter's Bone. Mm-hmm.
Great
and
film.
Kind of been a kind of mainstay at Sundance for the last few years. And I think, to me, this is a film that speaks directly, even though it's about this one guy who really is trying to sort of make this thing happen for him. It really is a much more kind of broadly resonant story, and it's uplifting. And I think in these kind of all these things we've been talking about, where you know times are tough and everybody's struggling in a lot of different ways, you kind of see this guy kind of plow through, and it's a movie gives you kind of a hug at the end. And I think that I think it's going to be a hit as a result. But I also think it kind of speaks to where sort of a lot of these filmmakers are. are, you know, just in terms of, you know, assessing the culture.
Poet, journalist, in this story, handicapped significantly. Catholic, longs to experience sex. I mean, that's got both sort of the, you know, what social and sensitive side and the sex side. That's maybe made for indie. Like, Krista Smith, what does it mean when a film is sold for pretty fair money at Sundance? What does that mean?
Well, I actually, it means a lot. I mean, I was in the theater when Surrogates premiered, and as Steve was saying, at first you're like, oh, handicapped. I mean, he cannot move. He is on a gurney. Mm-hmm. All he can do is move his head from right to left.
But he wants to live.
And what unfolds is this incredible story where you even forget that you forget that you're watching a guy that's completely his body is just immobile. Mm-hmm. And after the screening, you're crying, you're laughing. There was huge laughs, and people were you know sobbing in the next bit. But when that when it ended, there was a applause for 5 minutes, and the director comes out, and you know standing ovation and partial of the theater, and I realized at that moment, for me, I feel like it means I look at this, and in my job, I can easily see John Hawkes getting an Oscar nomination a year from now. And this is one of those films at Sundance that I do think has tremendous commercial legs and will surprise an audience. And I think Fox Searchlight felt the same thing. And I believe it's reported for $6 million they bought it, somewhere in that range, which I think is the most paid for a movie. And in this economy, that's a big price.
The Surrogate, writer-director Ben Lewin with John Hawkes and Helen Hunt. Let's go to French Lick, Indiana. Jeff is calling. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a father-son filmmaking company called Sun Films, and we just finished shooting our second full-length motion picture called Two to Tangle. And one of our questions was that we've been using amateur actors. We're in southern Indiana, so we don't feel like we have access to actors in Hollywood that have a greater name.
Yeah.
But my question is, do you feel that actors in Hollywood are, because of the trend changing to a lower budget film, they're willing to take chances with the low budget films rather than waiting for the big bucks to come through Hollywood big corporations?
It's a great question, and you're living it, Jeff, there in French Lick. Steve, how about it? What is it that brings a name Hollywood actor into one of these films? You think to be coaxed out to French Lick, Indiana, or wherever they're being made? I mean, is there that kind of mentality now among well-known actors?
Well, yeah, I don't know about French Lick, though. Certainly, actors have gone to some very far-flung places to shoot these films. I think that, actors are now kind of looking, kind of broadly speaking, they're looking at kind of in much further-flung places and in corners they never would have looked if the right script comes along. And certainly, you know, we've seen some people sort of emerge in those films. You know, the other thing I would say, you know, as far as shooting a movie in a you know small place with you know with a family member is, you know, if you use non-actors, sometimes you get a much more authentic story.
Yeah.
One of the movies we talked about earlier that was at this year's festival is called Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is a movie that features a lot of people who are non-professional actors who are just getting their start. And I think depending on what kind of story you're telling, if you're telling a story that's about everyday people and trying to get that kind of everyday texture, then certainly, you know, casting, you know, non-actors in many ways will be more effective than if you take, you know, kind of a known name or a star, because I think then people don't have the distraction of thinking about who that star is. They just see the actors as real people themselves. So there are a lot of different ways to go about it.
Krista, I mean, here you are. You're a cultural arbitrator there with Vanity Fair. If it's not name actors, if it's not even necessarily professional or experienced actors, do you come in jaundiced or do you come in ready to see something fresh and inviting?
Well, I think there's no judgment whatsoever, mm-hmm. whether you have Robert De Niro or Robert Miller. You go in, and if the movie's good and if it has a story to tell and there's captivating, interesting characters, you have an audience for it. And I do think in terms to speak to his point about big name stars, I mean, I think an actor is an actor. I mean, they're always looking for an interesting character to play and for a great story to be part of, no matter what the kind of economic price tag is on the budget.
Mm. It's
but certainly for them in the middle of America making these small films, I agree. I mean, you can find plenty of Hollywood is filled with people who were non-actors until they did their first movie.
Of course. That's the way it works. And thank goodness for outlets that let this stuff rise. Tyler in Pittsfield, Vermont. Tyler, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
I was thinking that it would be great to see a film that kind of showed the, say, ignorant disparity of the lives of like the North Korean people, even if it was with American actors, but just to kind of feel what it's like to look from the shoes of somebody that lives in that kind of situation where they don't see what the rest of the world is, and to feel what that is really like.
I think that's a great suggestion. We all sort of wonder and try to imagine, but to learn something about it and try and bring something like that to a general public. I mean, Steve, does that sound within a Sundance budget? I guess you don't have to have the cast of tens of thousands. You get into some snowy hut in the boondocks, and you could gin up a North Korean setting.
Well, actually, it's funny he says that. A couple of years ago, there was a movie at Sundance called The Red Chapel, which was about North Korea.
Okay.
And it was a Danish. That's the thing about the indie film world. If someone could come up with it, someone's already come up with it because everybody's always looking for these outlandish stories. I mean, this was not a big hit out of Sundance, but I saw it, and it was kind of a funny, kind of quirky film. It's a kind of a guy who, you know, these two guys who try to go to North Korea it's actually sort of a documentary style, and they try to sort of infiltrate. I think, look, the kind of general point there is that anytime you have a world that people don't really know about, it's going to make for some really interesting storytelling. I mean, I mentioned, and we were talking about John Hawks and Winter's Bone a few years ago. I mean, that's another kind of classic example. Even though it's right here in the U.S., the idea that you can kind of go into this sort of world, this, you know, meth labs and kind of the rural Ozarks, and really kind of pull a veil back on what's happening there, and whether you're doing it for drama, whether you're doing it for comedy or suspense. That, to me, is when the Sundance films, these Sundance indie films work best, is when you're kind of going into a place where, you know, people really haven't gone before.
Krista, and what about the posh/privilege, you know, ratio versus purpose and really telling it like it is? Sundance comes across with vibes of both to those of us on the outside looking in.
Oh, you mean the people teaming the streets?
And it is kind of see and be seen, and you know, you've got the whole celebrity thing too.
There's an element to that, but I think that's our culture. That's kind of what permeates our world. So makes sense that it's up here in Sundance. I mean, initially that had been very daunting. I think 10 years ago, the whole swag, or I was trying to think about how many years ago that all started. But I think Redford and Sundance, they've done a good job at kind of pushing that now out on the outskirts, so you're not inundated with it all the time. But there is got to be at least 100,000 people that come in through here for 5 days, and it gets pretty crowded. with those seeking to go to parties and get into parties. And also there's a whole music element that we didn't even talk about, where, you know, people come here. Robin Thicke was performing, and you have Ice-T was performing. All these people come in and do musical sessions that draws a whole other audience as well.
Well, it's a scene, and a little envy of you all for having experienced it this week. Of course, at the heart of it, filmmakers doing what we hope is important work. We always need that clear, sharp lens on our lives and beyond. Krista Smith with Vanity Fair, thank you so much for being with us today, Krista.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
And Steve Zajcik with the LA Times. Steve, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom. It was great.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.